com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. I'd like to thank all of our listeners who participated in the outreach to Urban Outfitters. As we discussed a week or so ago, there was much concern about a product line that Urban Outfitters had released that promoted prescription drug use. T-shirts, coffee mugs, shot glasses, flasks in the shape of prescription drugs with very catchy, unfortunately, little titles and directions like use freely and frequently until unable to stop, cheers and enjoy, et cetera, et cetera. The retail chain, as you may know, is very popular with teens and young adults, and the partnership at drugfree.org had called on consumers to please contact Urban Outfitters and ask them to have the products removed. A week later, the U.S. House Appropriations Committee, Hal Rogers, urged Urban Outfitters to stop selling the products. And finally, in late May, 23 attorneys general from various states around the United States sent a letter to the CEO and chairman, Richard A. Hayne, asking him to remove the products. I'm very happy to announce that as of June 17th, 2013, Urban Outfitters has released a statement saying that in the 20,000 products that comprise our assortment, there are styles that represent humor, satire, and hyperbole. In this extensive range of products, we recognize that from time to time there may be individual items that are misinterpreted by people who are not our customer. As a result of this misinterpretation, we are electing to discontinue these few styles from our current product offering. Thank you so much, those of you who called in, joined the online petitions, or were part of the letter campaign to the Urban Outfitters company. It's very nice to see that people can make a difference and that your words and your efforts are rewarded in having these kinds of unfortunate products removed from the shelf. So I'm very grateful and delighted that that has happened. I'm also grateful and delighted to have in studio today with me Jamie Deans, who is the founder and executive director of Promises Professional Treatment Center from Santa Monica, California. He brings with him a wide range of experience, and I have to just tell you, first of all, I'm rather intimidated because Mr. Deans started his career in broadcast journalism and is an Emmy Award-winning editor and producer for ABC World News Tonight, 2020, and Dateline NBC. He has been very instrumental in media campaigns for Morgan Stanley, a graduate of the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, which alone is just enough to intimidate anybody. Jamie has worked throughout his career to help develop very important campaigns for marketing and to help businesses grow and reach their new and current customers. Where I know Jamie from, actually, is the work that he did at Talbot Recovery Campus. We were there almost at the same time.
Almost. Within a few months.
So thank you so much for being here from California on this very hot day in Atlanta.
Well, it's lovely to be here. And, you know, I'm just Jamie. You know, I've been very fortunate to work for some really wonderful organizations. And I think the common thread for me is that I've gotten to carry a message to help people get information about what's going on around them in their lives and perhaps give them some information to help change their lives when that's appropriate. So it's just wonderful to see you again, and thank you for having me as a guest. I really appreciate that.
My pleasure. I have to say that a couple of weeks ago I was actually out visiting Jamie and the team out at the professionals program at Promises. Very, very impressed with their program and would like to talk a little bit more about that. Sure. Now, I have to tell you, I hear this over and over again, as I'm sure you do as well. Why do professionals, executives, physicians, why do these people need to be in a treatment center just specially for them?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, I think it's one that, you know, that bears some explaining, because I always like to tell people that addiction's an equal opportunity destroyer. It
Indeed.
Really cuts across all demographics. It's mm-hmm. roughly 12% of the population. And it really doesn't matter age, race, gender, education, income levels, et cetera. And I think that's not necessarily commonly known. I think people tend to think of it more as a youth problem, perhaps
right.
an income differentiated issue, but it's really not. It applies straight across. Excuse me. And I don't know too many other diseases that have that. There's usually other components to it. And one of the things that we've learned over the years with addiction treatment is that people tend to do better when they're in treatment and are able to create a more solid foundation for recovery and treatment when they're being treated with other people who have shared similar life experiences coming into treatment, and people who are going to also face similar recovery challenges for
yes.
when they leave. Professionals in particular tend to be people who are analytics. They've functioned and gotten where they are in life by using their intellect, by their ability to read, understand, synthesize, and utilize material. And so that's a very different kind of client or patient than, say, an 18-year-old who may have gotten into drugs very early in life. And addicts and alcoholics are very good at saying, well, I'm not like him. He's got a drug problem. I'm okay. You know, and one of the things we ask people to do in treatment is to try to find the commonality between them. So we sort of eliminate what we call splitting mm-hmm. between a professional and an adolescent by giving them a particular program. And then the other thing that I think is very important is that we try to meet the professionals where they are. We say to them, we're going to allow you to use your intellect to mm-hmm. understand your disease and give you that as a starting point. And then the challenge for both the professional and for the treatment team is to be able to get them to take that down to a feelings level where they begin to explore, you know, what issues they brought perhaps from childhood, what's fueling their addiction, what's driving their addiction, and get them to recognize the triggers that have caused them to use drugs and alcohol to begin with, and that will continue to be challenges when they leave treatment.
I think that's a really important distinction, and we often see programs specifically for young adults because the life lessons that they have or haven't learned are different than a middle-aged adult or a geriatric patient. The transition issues and the life skills that one needs to manage their life and their recovery is different depending on their age and their experience and their education.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I, you know, sort of marvel at the young adults who go through treatment. Mm-hmm. They have so much social peer pressure when they get home. It's a very challenging age group and environment. They tend to need to be in treatment longer periods mm-hmm. of time, but they're also very different than professionals in that we can do lectures for our professionals. We can keep them in groups for an hour and a half. It's hard to keep an 18-year-old seated in a chair and focused on what you're talking about for that period of time. And so that's what, you know, that's part of the reason that we've made that differentiation.
And therein lies one of the biggest differences in treatment. When you're working with a young adult or an adolescent, you give it in short bursts, and you tailor lots of activities, physical kinds of things, which can also be learning and opportunities for understanding themselves and recovery. But you have to present things and handle groups and program material very differently for an active
absolutely.
Young adult.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're far more experiential in nature.
Right.
And their process of, you know, understanding and coming to sort of recognition of the feelings and how they're going to process that in their lives are very different. We, you know, with our professionals, you know, we have them do a lot of written assignments. We'll actually give them the research. They want to know. You
mm-hmm.
know, we treat doctors. When we say professionals, by the way, we don't just consider that to be doctors and lawyers, although
mm-hmm.
we do treat a lot of those.
Right.
We also treat airline pilots. We treat business executives. We treat entrepreneurs. entrepreneurs, business owners, teachers. It's a broad range of people who have, as I said, used their intellectual skills to get where they are. And so they're largely analytics or scientists. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to tell them they've got a disease, they want to know why you say that, you know, which is a fair question.
Right.
You know, and so we give them the research to actually read. And, you know, some of the written assignments we do, we're based in the 12 steps. You know, one of the first things you have a client do is write a first step, which talks about they came to believe that they were powerless over drugs and alcohol and that their life had become unmanageable. And so we have them actually write that step out and explain how they got in, you know, their using history and what's happened to them as a result. And I don't think in many other treatment programs you get things with bibliographies and footnotes and all kinds of stuff. And it's like, okay, well, this is a wonderful academic process, but could you now tell me, how do you feel about what happened when you were 12 or when you were 15 or when you were discovered using at work? You know, what was going on? Let's talk about that. So, but I think that once you do give them that, then they're much more willing to embrace a spiritual recovery path and integrate that as part of their treatment and recovery program.
That first step is so critically
important.
Oh, my
goodness.
And I've worked with professionals in the past who want an outline of all of the steps, and then they want to be moving right along when they haven't really grasped that first step, that self-diagnosing, as
Absolutely.
I talk with patients about that. You have to really understand we're talking about you.
Exactly.
We're talking about this disease and how it affects you and how it has brought you to this place. It's critical. It's critical, critical, critical. And so often I see the professionals wanting to check off the boxes and move it along and not be patient and really understand and grasp and accept this disease.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that we, you know, find is that they're very motivated clients, you know, and they're wonderful clients once you can get them past this idea that they are powerless. They sort of read that, but they don't really in their heart understand what that means. And, you know, they're sort of I wouldn't call it a joke, but a sort of understanding with physicians who come to treatment that they think they're there to consult on their own case.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, another reason we go for a broad range of types of professionals is that each one of them tends to think that they're very special and very mm-hmm. different. And they do have this history of accomplishment. And so you have to help them get past that. And I myself am in recovery, and I'm sort of the living embodiment of my own worst nightmare client in the sense that it took me several treatments to finally be able to stay sober for a long period of time. And I remember being asked to, you know, sort of take this leap of faith into spiritual recovery. And I just remember thinking to myself, you take a leap. I'm not leaping anywhere. I've been able to think my way through. You know, I've got 2 graduate degrees. I'm very successful. So just give me the information, and I'll think my way through it. And thinking is helpful, but, you know, there's another saying that our own best thinking got us into treatment.
Right.
So, you know, we have to help them understand their attitudes and their behaviors and their underlying belief systems, you know, and that's the part that's slow to change.
Yes.
So we try to let them go through this intellectual process first and say, okay, now take a few deep breaths. Slow down, because they want to check everything off, and
right.
You know, they think that they should be done in 2 or 3 days, and of course the treatment process is much longer
it's
than that.
A little bit longer
than
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Takes a bit longer. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about why would someone choose the professional treatment program at Promises. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Detailing Addiction. In studio today, my guest is Jamie Deans, who is the founder and executive director of the Professionals Treatment Program at Promises in Santa Monica, California. If you're interested in learning more about this program, please dial 424-744-5160 or go on the web at www.professionalstreatment.com. That's professionals with an S, treatment.com, and you'll be able to find more information about this and other programs within the Promises and Elements family. Right before the break, we were talking about the Professionals Treatment Program, just kind of in general. How did Professionals Treatment come about? What's the history behind that, and how did you go about founding the program at Promises?
Well, it's very interesting to be sitting in Atlanta, you know, where actually Professionals Treatment was created initially by Dr. Douglas Talbot, who was the founder of the Talbot Recovery Campus. And Dr. Talbot came up with a treatment model for treating impaired healthcare professionals. And they don't like the word impaired, but these were healthcare professionals with substance abuse issues. And it really is the only model to date that incorporates three things: intensive diagnostic evaluations, rigorous evaluations that look at a client from medical, psychiatric, psychological mm-hmm. perspectives, and includes, you know, much more evaluation than is done by a standard program,
right.
Much more intensive psychological testing, et cetera. Then it involves highly individualized treatment with a lot of psychotherapy in addition to group therapy, which mm-hmm. is, of course, the heart of all addiction treatment programs,
right.
To help clients find the commonality of their experience. But I think the third part is really the crucial differentiator, and we prepare our clients for that, and that is that you really need to have about 5 years of continuing care following your discharge from a treatment program.
That's a lot more than usual, right?
That is a lot more than usual. Most treatment centers say, we'll do it for 6 months and see mm-hmm. how it goes. But the other thing that the professionals, that Dr. Talbot realized, was that people needed to be accountable mm-hmm. And responsible for their recovery. And so when you hear treatment center outcomes, when they quote them, most of them are anecdotal. They're really just guessing at what their outcomes
right.
are. And because there's a public safety issue around healthcare professionals, you want to mm-hmm. make sure your doctor is actually sober if he's
right.
going to take out your appendix. And so what they came up with was 5 years of discharge monitoring and random drug screening. And so we have every one of our clients do that, whether they're a healthcare professional or not. And so that is the model: evaluation, individualized treatment, and post-discharge monitoring and screening. And Dr. Skipper, who's our director of professionals health services, Dr. Gregory Skipper, he wrote the definitive study on this.
He did.
And what they found out was that physicians who completed their 5 years of post-discharge monitoring and screening, at the end of 7 years, 87% of them were still sober.
Wow.
And we had what I would call documentable sobriety.
Yes.
We had random drug tests to prove that they were sober.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would tell you that any treatment center that quotes you a figure, even 30%, is probably kidding themselves.
Right.
The reality with addiction is that it's the same as a lot of other diseases that require mm-hmm. maintenance: diabetes, obesity, high cholesterol, things that require human beings to stay on a program we're just not very good at
right.
as a species. you know, we'll do it for 6 months, maybe mm-hmm. a year, and then we tend to think, okay, well, I got this now. And so I think that's, you know, the key to it. So when Dr. Skipper and I, you know, went to create, you know, this program, we thought, well, we want to take the best of what's already been done,
right,
and then we want to update it, because the neuroscience of addiction mm-hmm. has been growing in leaps and bounds over the last decade. And so we wanted to take the best of what had been done before and add in, you know, some of the newer techniques while still keeping very faithful to the 12 steps, because that's the other thing, is that there is no more successful
no.
program than 12-step recovery. And it's free.
Free.
Yeah. What, where else can you hear that in today's society? It's free. You know, so we really espouse that belief.
Well, I think that that the program is absolutely excellent, and your leadership, yourself and Dr. Skipper are, you know, legends in the field.
Well, at least Greg is. I would thank you for that, but at least Greg is a legend, yeah.
And many of you may not know, Dr. Skipper was actually in Alabama and ran the physician health program there for a number of years, and actually brought another tool for our recovery tool chest in the form of the ETG urine drug test, which looks at a long-acting metabolite of alcohol so that we can tell if someone's been drinking in the last 3 or 4 days,
right,
where we used to only be able to tell in the last 8 hours or so if they had been drinking. So it's a great program with a lot of leadership. Talk a little bit more, if you would, about the assessment. And is this just for people coming into your program, or if there's a an executive or a school teacher or someone who is really struggling with, do I really have addiction? Do I have something else? Could they take advantage of the assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. We believe that the assessment process is a critical part of treating any alcoholic or addict. If you went in for any sort of health-related issue, they would do blood work, they would do tests if you're having problems with your liver or your lungs,
right,
whatever.
They do a physical.
Exactly, because what you want is data.
Right.
You know, to be able to compare the individual client or patient to everybody else. And so what we do is we have a very unique, I think, process, but every single client who comes to Professionals Treatment at Promises, whether they're a healthcare professional and are there because perhaps their licensing board is sending them or their physician health program, we believe everybody should have a rigorous evaluation because it's an important diagnostic tool. It becomes the foundation for what the treatment plan is going to be. And our belief is that it should be the standard of care everywhere. I think the issue with that is that for low-cost programs, it does require a certain amount of expertise and time,
right,
and so it's not necessarily, you know, economically feasible for them. But we actually have one of the most cost-effective evaluation programs in the country. It's $3,000.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. For those of you listening, that really is an excellent price.
It's actually well below our cost. We do it because we want to try to induce people who aren't sure whether they have a problem or not to come to treatment, you know, at a reasonable rate. I would tell you that about 70% of the people who come to us for evaluation are diagnosed with having some form of chemical dependency. Not all of them require residential level of care that we provide. Some can be treated at home by their therapist or an intensive outpatient program. Part of the reason that number is only 70% is that physician health programs, if a physician gets a DUI,
right,
they have to go for an evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't indicate at all that they have a substance problem. It could have been a wedding or just bad judgment that day.
Right.
So I think that's why the number is what it is. But our process is this, is that, first of all, every client who calls we'll do an hour and a half pre-admission interview with Dr. Skipper, who's an addiction medicine specialist. And he's going to spend a lot of time with them finding out about their history, finding out about their usage patterns. Is it just alcohol? Are there drugs involved? When did they start using them? What are the problems and issues that are stressors in their life that maybe, you know, that they're saying is why I use, you know? And it gives us some background. We're also going to call the referring clinician if there's a therapist involved or a doctor. doctor. We're going to get all their prior treatment records. If there's been any drug screening, we'll get that. And so we have a pretty good idea oftentimes of what the client's basic issues are before they get to us.
Mm-hmm.
And when they admit, assuming that they don't need detox, if they need to be detoxed, you can't start an evaluation when they're detoxing because you won't get reliable data.
Right.
So assuming they don't need that, we usually start the first day by having them do a battery of psychological tests. And we use personality testing, MMPIs, MCMIs, mm-hmm. microcogs. We also do projective testing like Rorschachs. And so we're getting a complete battery of tests that our psychologist will determine the exact mix based on the issues and the results that they're seeing on some of the more basic tests. They will then spend a full 4 to 6 hours with the psychologist, who will take Dr. Skipper's pre-admission interview and go even deeper into it and find out who were some of the people who were involved in the incidents of this person's life. You know, and again, get a very detailed history. And they're what we call collateral information providers. What will happen then is that the psychologist will call those information providers because what we want to find out is how does the identified patient's story of how they got there, how does that match up with what the collateral information providers, the other people in their lives, do they see the same person or not? And more often than not, they're very, very different,
very different
stories.
Right.
So that's the first part of the process is the psychologist review and the psychological testing. Then we'll have one of our addiction psychiatrists sit down with them and do a complete psychiatric evaluation. And what we're looking for here, you know, is, you know, do they have co-occurring disorders, depression, bipolar disorder? Do they have personality disorders, mood disorders? And we're finding increasingly that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people come in with just straight CD, chemical dependency issues. I think some of that is that prior to this, a lot of treatment centers weren't really prepared. They couldn't diagnose it because they didn't have the qualified personnel to do it.
Right.
And I think we've also become a lot more educated about how these things are interrelated. A lot of times these underlying psychiatric issues are what's actually driving the addiction. People start using substances to self-medicate.
Right.
And that's a real problem for them. Dr. Skipper will then do an additional addiction medicine assessment based on the other information that we've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And we also like to have them sit in a group with our other clients. And that helps us see how they function in a social setting, if you will, with other people. What we're looking for is how much personal insight do they have? How willing are they to self-disclose issues in their lives? And then for our healthcare professionals, one other element we do is we have them sit in a group with physicians who have already been through treatment and are in their 5 years of monitoring. And I think especially the docs, you know, they think, oh, finally I'm going to be with my peers. And they're going to really understand what's going on because the physicians often come in with very complex stories about how they know their drug tests have been positive for 3 months, but it really has more to do with their metabolism, these very complex stories.
Right.
They're thrilled to see their peers who are finally going to understand what's happening. And, you know, if the peer group thinks that there's nothing wrong, they'll say so. But more often than not, they're like, get a grip.
Right.
You know, you have the same story I did. And so, you know, they help break through that crucial barrier of denial. But I think that, you know, one of the things you mentioned is really key. A lot of times trying to get a client to agree to come to treatment for 30 to 90 days, that's a very high barrier to get over. And so one of the things we, you know, recommend to people is if they're not willing to commit to that treatment, because most of the time the people in their lives are pretty sure there's a problem, the client themselves may not. So what we suggest they do is we call it intervening to the evaluation. They'll say, why don't you just go for this 3-day evaluation, see what the experts have to say, and then you can make a decision at that time.
It's a great entree in, and sometimes you discover there really is something else going on. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how someone might get into treatment and what the program actually looks like. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Rena Sartain asking you to join us on the Master Gardener Hour every Saturday morning at 11. Lively conversation and great guests. You'll always learn a lot. See you on Saturday.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction. We hope we get to stay online with you. We are having a really bad thunderstorm here, and yesterday we lost power, so hopefully today we'll make it through the show because it's a great show. My guest in studio today is Jamie Deans, Executive Director of the Professionals Treatment Program at Promises. Jamie has a long history of working within the industry and was director of communications at Talbot Recovery Campus here in Atlanta and a case manager at the Hanley Center in West Palm Beach before he went to work and founded and is running the program at Promises. Right before our break, we were talking a little bit about the assessment program and how that can be a very nice entree for a situation when you really don't know what's going on. Someone is having unusual behavior and it's really a question. There's also some people who are taking pain medication because their doctor has written them scripts for that, or they're on benzodiazepines. They have, and I'm using quotes here, all of you, they have legitimate prescriptions and they're taking their medicine, and yet others around them think they're impaired or this is not working really well. So sometimes we have to really assess people and think outside the box in terms of, could this be something else? Do you have the ability to assess someone's pain situation, for example?
Yes, we do. And I think one of the things that Dr. Skipper brings to our program is he's very creative. And, you know, if I say the word rule to Greg, he always corrects me and says guidelines. because no two people are different.
Right.
And these are very complex issues. There are no simple answers, unfortunately. But we do include in both our assessment and treatment regimens chronic pain and sex issues as well,
yes,
as sexual disorders. But the thing about chronic pain is that it's a very broad-ranging issue, and you really need a hospital to help you parse out what is real pain and what may be pain that's just being caused by the fact that somebody's been taking their pain medication for so long that they feel like they're actually in pain, but it may not be being caused by a physical source any longer. So we work with a gentleman named Dr. Joshua Prager, who runs the chronic pain management program at UCLA Hospital.
Excellent.
So there we have the entire UCLA Medical Center for them to do all the imaging, you know, and the medical aspects of, is this pain real or is it perceived pain? And so we integrate that into our three-day evaluation, usually adds an extra day onto it.
Sure.
In the event that the chronic pain is determined to be, whether it's determined to be real or perceived, they still have a program to help people manage that. And if it is not a real physical problem, then, you know, how do we transition them through physical therapy, through psychotherapy, to be able to move away from that and make their lives productive again. If there is a legitimate physical issue, then maybe there are alternative treatments, you know, muscle stimulators, non-narcotic pain management things that that can be employed. And so what we basically do is integrate that into our own treatment program. For sexual disorders, we use something called the Sexual Recovery Institute, which was founded by Rob Weiss. Now, I should state in terms of full disclosure that our parent company, Elements Behavioral Health, also owns the Sexual Recovery Institute. But we'll include in our evaluation that. And quite frankly, that is sometimes how people's chemical dependency issues come to light. The first thing that's seen at work is that they're being inappropriate with, you know, other employees. And so they come to us sometimes, you know, through that. And so we can refer them to SRI has a 2-week intensive program for sexual disorders. We, again, can integrate that into our treatment schedule. In some cases, that's a not intensive enough program. They may need full residential care. And what we're looking to find out in the evaluations, which is the primary disorder? Is it the sexual disorder or is it the chemical dependency? Because oftentimes, many times in the sexual disorders world, they're actually only using chemicals to assuage their guilt and pain around their sexual behavior, which they know is inappropriate. And so sometimes if you can clear up the sexual behavior, the chemical dependency issue goes away. If the chemical dependency issue is primary, then we'll start with that. And, you know, once they're sober and we've sort of begun to get them on the right track, then we can deal with the sexual disorders at that time.
That is fabulous that you can deal with the pain, with the sexual disorders. I don't know whether I'm just getting better at asking the questions and doing an assessment or whether it truly is increasing, but I have to tell you that more and more my patients are bringing as part of their symptomatology issues around sexual behavior, maybe addiction to pornography. There's all sorts of things happening.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with the internet and access to these kinds of materials, you're getting a different range of sexual disorders. I think also that people are actually better able to talk about it. It's becoming a little more less taboo to even discuss it. And Rob Weiss, who founded SRI, always likes to say that, you know, sex addiction is where chemical addiction was in 1960. And I think we have a lot more knowledge of it. And I think that people, you know, although there's still shame around it, I think that they're able to reach out also and understand that they can actually do something to treat it, and that, that it's not sort of that they're a bad person. You know, it has moral aspects to it, but it's not a moral problem. It's, you know, it's a real disorder and that they need to get help for it. And they can.
And they can. So you can do all of these assessments and help to identify a variety of physical, emotional addiction problems.
There's commonalities in, in all three of them that overlap. And so it's very important that, you know, you integrate the two or three. We've had people actually with all three. I don't know of another program in the country that actually does all three. I don't want to, you know, sort of, you know, toot our own horn too much. But I think we're the only ones who can actually do that. I think one of the real advantages to being in Los Angeles also is that there are a lot of – there can be eating disorders, you know, food issues. And one of it could be gambling, what we call process addictions. And so being in Los Angeles, we have access to, you know, leading specialists in any field you can think of. Promises has been around 25 years, and so we've already identified the sort of the best, if you will, in terms of treating those things. People who understand chemical addiction as well.
Very important.
And so we can bring that into our treatment programs, and it looks seamless to the client. They just know that they're seeing Dr. So-and-so for their gambling or, you know, whoever it might be. So that's a big advantage of being where we're located.
That's huge. And to have that ability to integrate treatment and to have everybody on the treatment team, whether or not they're physically a part of your program or not, they're part of your team and they do understand addiction. And that's probably one of the biggest challenges to those of us who are out in the field is finding referral sources who understand and can work with our patients and treat them well, but also not give them medications or treatment plans that may actually make their addiction worse. So it's wonderful that you've got all of those elements, including the sexual issues, the pain, eating disorders, potential professional issues and psychiatric issues. I mean, truly, I don't think there's anybody else who does all of that together and do it so well. So you bring all of these things together, you make your assessment, and then you give the patient, the family, who gets this information and what's the next step?
What we do is, you know, we put together the evaluation team. That would be the psychiatrist, the psychologist, Dr. Mm-hmm. Skipper, and usually the clinician who we project would work with the client. And we do what we call staff the case. And we have whoever the referring party was, whether it was a psychologist or, you know, their clinician at home mm-hmm. or their physician. And we're looking in the conference to come up with three things, diagnoses, and we use the DSM criteria, which is sort of the Bible of behavioral health, and there are five axes there. So we come up with diagnoses, we come up with recommendations for treatment, mm-hmm. you know, and then when necessary, a fitness for duty report. And so, as I said, that becomes the foundation of the treatment plan. Once a client enters treatment, it's a very rigorous program. They do 20 hours a week of group therapy.
Wow.
And this includes cognitive behavioral therapy, which is how we integrate in the 12 steps because mm-hmm. there's the foundations, although the founders of AA didn't know they were doing CBT, they actually were.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We use DBT, somatic experiencing, you know, affect regulation, mm-hmm. And we do process groups 5 days a week, 6 days a week. We also include things like yoga and meditation. And then they have 6 hours of professional-specific groups. And these are professionals issues groups where they talk about things like the challenge of being a professional where you need to be the expert. You're the mm-hmm. go-to person at your job. You're the decision maker. You know, nobody wants their doctor to say, well, gee, let me call my AA sponsor to see whether you have a heart condition or not.
Right.
You know, they have to be right. And they're, you know, at work, they're expected to be correct. Well, how do you balance that with being an honest, open-minded, mm-hmm. willing, and humble recovery mm-hmm. person? And that's a difficult balance for them to maintain. I always say people go to their default position, which is to be the expert.
Right.
And that doesn't serve their recovery as well. So that's what their professional issues group does. We have return to work groups. So these are generally type A personalities. They're working 80, 100 hours a week. And so mm-hmm. we try to help them set up a healthy life schedule that will do that. And then for professionals, they attend – or excuse me, for doctors, they attend a healthcare professionals group. Lawyers go to executive and lawyer support groups. They have 12-step meetings that are tailored to their professions, like the lawyers have something called the other bar. physicians go to caduceus meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, airline pilots go to birds of a feather mm-hmm. or little wings. And these are where they can discuss the specific challenges to their specific industry. Now, on top of that, they're going to have 2 hours a week with their primary therapist. They're going to have 1 hour a week with Dr. Skipper. Mm-hmm. And they're also going to have an hour a week with their family therapist individually. The family therapist will also be working with the family from the first week the client enters treatment. Some treatment centers have what they call family weekends where they bring in 10, 12, whatever number of families
right.
for a 3 or 4 day period, and they throw a lot at them in that
right.
period of time. We don't think that that necessarily works as well as our way of doing it. So we start working. We use a lot of video conferencing.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. We tie in the families from the first bit, and we're doing a lot of the psychoeducational piece, informing them about what the disease is, what mm-hmm. codependency is, what the client's part in this is, what's their part in this, what do they need to do to recover. Because most families don't know that they've been affected by this disease and that they need to practice their own recovery and that that's all they need to be responsible for. They're not responsible for the client's recovery. And that's an important element when we talk about our discharge monitoring process. Then towards the, say, third or fourth week, we bring the family in for a 3-day session. But instead of there being 10 families, there's 2 or 3. It's a much more intimate setting, and they mm-hmm. feel much – I think it's much easier for them to open up about what's going on. So that adds up to about 30 hours a week, and then they have written assignments. We also have them do something called insight therapy, which is where they go and they work at a public treatment center. for indigent folks. And, you know, there's two reasons for this. One, I tell the doctors, think of it as you're going to work as a candy striper. You're there to do anything but practice medicine. You're there to learn the process of giving back, you know, to being part of somebody else's recovery. But they also get the idea that they're lucky to be at a place like Promises.
Right.
And that, you know, one or two good more binges, and they could perhaps not have those resources available to do that. So
be there,
it's a very
too.
Intensive program.
It sounds intensive and yet very appropriate. We're going to take a break again. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about reentry issues and one of the really important reasons why a professional's treatment program is important. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We'll be right back.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction. Today we're talking about the Professionals Treatment Program at Promises in Santa Monica, California. With me is Jamie Deans, who is their founder and executive director. We've been talking about the importance of the assessment and the actual treatment program. One of the things that I think, in my experience, professionals really struggle with and why their treatment needs to be different, and that's around the reentry issues, and you mentioned it briefly a moment ago, fitness for duty. When people have licenses, when there is public safety issues, when they have a large company that they are responsible for, returning to work is challenging, and there are lots of things that people have to do to be able to do that safely and to do that appropriately. So when you talk about fitness for duty, tell people a little bit about what you mean.
Sure. Fitness for duty is really an aspect of what we would call risk management.
Okay.
With a physician or a nurse or a pharmacist or a dentist, it's really overt. Is this person safe to go back and practice their profession? Because if they're not, they could do real physical harm or perhaps even kill somebody.
Right.
And so one of the things, our responsibility is to certify to the licensing board or physician health program that this person is psychologically, psychiatrically, medically, and spiritually safe to practice medicine. And because there's a license involved, there's a lot of what we would call leverage. You know, the doctor either completes treatment successfully and stays in their recovering, mm-hmm. continuing care program, or their license will be suspended or taken away. And so they have a lot of incentive to stay sober. And Dr. Skipper and I, you know, feel very strongly that, you know, that can be done for other professionals.
Absolutely.
As well.
And should be.
Absolutely. We have corporate accounts. And what they're really worried about is, if I take this person and have them go to treatment, how do I know they're going to stay sober? Because they have the same issue on a different scale, which mm-hmm. is, how can I, you know, be able to say to my clients, well, this person is sound to be able to practice whatever their profession is. So we call it the creative use of leverage. And so one of the things we do is we set up what are called contingency contracts, which are what physicians sign. The physician signs an agreement that says, okay, I'll go to treatment. I can keep practicing medicine, but I agree to successfully complete my treatment and stay in post-discharge monitoring. So the question is, that gives them both accountability mm-hmm. and responsibility for their own recovery. And you need both of those things. So with somebody who's coming from a business, we'll set up a contingency contract with that person. Mm. And there's usually an EAP involved or a case manager, because the company really doesn't want to know anything right. about the case, nor do you want them
you
to.
No.
So what you have is somebody who's just going to tell the company, yes, this person is sober, you know, and they're following their treatment plan. And the only way they'll know that they're not is when the case manager calls them and says, Jamie's out of compliance with his
right.
agreement. And so what we do is we set up a contract which says that they agree to complete treatment, they agree to complete their continuing care plan, and they agree to be in 5 years of monitoring. And if should they fail to do so, then the contract outlines a set of escalating consequences. Small ones to begin with. Maybe they have to do an extra therapy session. Maybe we do more screening. Maybe they need to go to more 12-step meetings. But the case manager will, if you will, triage the continuing care team, which could be a primary therapist, a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. a family therapist, whatever is determined they need on an ongoing basis. And they'll decide based on the incident, you know, what's the appropriate consequence. And that could be everything up to including having another assessment, going back to treatment. If it's been set up by a company, it could also include termination.
Mm-hmm.
If it's with a family, it could be maybe this person has a history of driving drunk with their children. Then maybe they can't see their children except in supervised settings. But we want to make sure that they are, in fact, fit to do whatever their role is. I think the other aspect of this that's really crucial for families is that, you know, spouses and family members are only responsible to take care of themselves. They've been caretaking this individual usually for years, you know, and what they need to do is move their life forward. The addict or alcoholic needs to take responsibility for their recovery and be accountable for it. And so one of the things we say to spouses is having this person in monitoring and drug screening, you're not going to have to wonder, are they sober? Because if they're not, it's going to come back mm-hmm. in the test and you're going to be notified. Now, the flip side, and they like that because it takes the stress and doubt out of it. Now, the clients actually like that also because we basically say to them, you know, when you go home, if you think everybody is going to just trust you and believe that you're going to stay sober, then maybe you need to stay a little longer. Maybe you're not quite sober yet because, people, you know, you've burned a lot of bridges. People
right.
aren't going to trust you. So this is a way that you can say to them, I'll stay sober. And you don't have to keep asking me or wondering or sort of looking at me sideways, wondering if I'm sober because you're going to know if I am or if I'm not. And it mirrors the physician's model that we talked about earlier. And so it's important, though, that you put that in place while they're still in treatment.
Right.
Because if not, you're unlikely to get it in place once they go home.
Because of the complicated nature of these patients and because you're often interacting with licensing boards, you need to have a really highly qualified staff, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. One of the things that when you're dealing with sophisticated, educated people like this is that they want to know that the people who are treating them are. And they present all the intellectual arguments, if you will. But I think, you know, that's the sort of presentation aspect
right.
of it and answering objections to the clients. Well, how do I know the person who's treating me is qualified? I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a CEO. So the what I call alphabet soup at the end, whether it's PhD or PsyD or MFT, whatever, it needs to be there. But I think the real reason to do that is that, as we said before, you know, these are complex cases
right.
these days. And so you need to recognize what you're seeing,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's actually what the client's presenting. And then staging treatment is so important. How are you going to get their addiction issues to tie in with their behavioral health issues? You know, and when are you going to introduce this to them? Help the clients make the connection because therapy is a lot about having the clients do a self-discovery process. You need to keep them engaged in their treatment.
Yes.
Nobody's happy to be there. You know, nobody mm-hmm. wakes up one day and says, I'm going to make my life better by going to treatment.
Unfortunately,
but you need to keep them, have some level of buy-in on the process. And we want them to do that on their continuing care plan so that they really believe that even if they're not happy about it, that what they're doing is in their best interest and that their life will be far better as a result, not they're being punished or penalized for previous behavior. So we have three licensed psychologists. All our people are master's level or better. And, you know, for 20 patients, three licensed psychologists is amazing.
Pretty great ratio.
You know, most treatment centers have one, and they usually have my job, and they don't see a caseload. In our case, that's just not the case. And we have very small caseload. It's a maximum of 8 for a primary therapist.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So assuming that I'm a young adult or I don't have a professional career, what else is there in the Promises Network that might be helpful to me?
Well, Promises is actually made up of 3 different treatment facilities. We've talked enough about professionals treatment. The young adult program is at our West Los Angeles facility. It's actually the original Promises. And it's, again, a very small, intimate setting. That's part of what the Promises mm-hmm. philosophy is. And it's a initial 45-day program. Young adults take a little longer,
yes,
usually to break through their denial, and their ability to trust and self-disclose takes a little longer. So that's a 45-day to 6-month program, and it's in 4 separate phases. But they need that longer-term mm-hmm. support to help them create that. Both the professionals treatment program and the young adult program are about $26,000-$27,000 for the first month, and a 90-day stay is roughly $49,000. We also have a program in Malibu, which is a little bit infamous. This was designed for now what we lovingly refer to as the 1%.
The 1%.
The 1% of our population, very high-income individuals.
I see.
And this particular group of people have been very hard to get into treatment and very difficult to keep in treatment because they don't hit the traditional kind of what we call bottoms. They don't run out of money. They're not confronted by an employer. They usually own the business, or they're the entitled unemployed. They don't work. You know, they don't have mm-hmm. to. So it's very hard to get them to come to treatment. And so what was designed was a program that caters to them. And so it's in the hills in Malibu. It's in 5 very beautiful homes. They have wonderful meals that are prepared for them by a chef. And in that program, lots of what we call ancillary services, neurofeedback, acupuncture, massage, equine therapy, that's all bundled into mm-hmm. one price. You can get those at the other programs, but in order to keep them more cost effective, mm-hmm. you know, you have to pay for them as you need them or want them. I think that one sort of misconception about Promises really invented high-end treatment. We're a leader in developing it. You know, one misconception is that you're fueling people's narcissism and entitlement, which is certainly there in all alcoholics and addicts.
Sure.
But that's just not really an issue because you have to engage that. And mm-hmm. quite frankly, these people are going to go home to these kind of settings anyway, and there's absolutely no data that says if it's Spartan that you're going to have better results.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And
pleasure.
The information. If someone would like to get in touch with you, do you suggest the professionals treatment?
That's our website.
.com?
That professionals treatment, and as Susan said, plural professionalstreatment.com. You can also call me directly if you like. I answer my phone all the time.
You do?
744-424-5160 is my office number. You can also email me at jdeans@promises.com, and, you know, we'd be happy to help you. Even if you think we're not the right program for you, you know, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is we're going to help you find the right place for you because we're not the right treatment center for everybody. And, again, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, thank you. And we'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.